With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. The San Diego Farm and Nursery Expo is coming up November 2nd, and it'll be held from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the California Center for Arts in Escondido. Folks can attend for free and experience the unique diversity of Southern California agriculture. Attendees will have an opportunity to network with vendors and learn about the newest technology and equipment for their garden, farm, or nursery. And you'll also get a chance to talk with agricultural experts at the agricultural seminars. If you'd like to find out more information, you can visit www.sdfarmbureau.org/expo. And now let's get into today's show headlines. Answering the call to advocate for agriculture. The California legislature just wrapped up its 2023 session earlier this month, passing many bills that will make life a bit harder for California agriculturalists. Andrew Genasi, San Joaquin County Farm Bureau Executive Director, with why it's important to advocate before it's too late.
Every year there's a call for some kind of come up to the Capitol and voice your opinion. And if you don't answer that call, then it's pretty tough to complain you didn't get what you wanted. If you don't show up, I'll tell you right now, the other groups show up. They're there. And that's who the legislators see. And when you have a legislature like you do in California that is largely urban, completely divorced from agriculture, as long as they go to the store and there's something sitting on the shelf, they think everything's fine. You know, you have to go up there and talk to them, and screaming at people ain't going to help nothing. Go up there and have a conversation. Invite them out to your farm to see what you do, to meet your employee.
Genasi adds,
The Valley legislators are on our side 90% of the time, right? But we need to get them to invite the urban legislators that they work with. Come out for a tour. You know, get two or three buddies that you work together with on, you know, whatever bill. Have them come down and see what we're doing. See how we manage water. You know, what we've done on, you know, water efficiency. What their investments that the state has made in water efficiency, what's the payoff? Because there's a lot, if you never leave Sacramento and all you're being told is that, oh, farmers are wasting water, they've destroyed the environment, like, come on out, see what we got going on.
Stay tuned as we'll have more on this topic later in the show. Right now, here's AgNet West Brian German with more Ag News.
Tough growing conditions provide an opportunity to learn more about new varieties of raisin grapes. Ranch manager for Marthadol Enterprises, Austin Hubble, explained why a year like this one with abnormal weather patterns is important to the overall evaluation of new varieties.
That's one part of researching these new varieties before any of us plant it on any kind of large scale. We need to know what this does in an optimum year that we have seen, you know, a few of in recent history. And we also need to see what these varieties are going to do in a less than optimum year before we can fully say this is a great variety, we need to plant it. We need to have that full analysis because we want to give growers reasonable expectations. We want good results from the varieties, of course, but we also want them to have a full understanding of what may happen in a less than optimum drying year.
SAP analysis can provide a better picture of the nutritional needs of plants. As the practice becomes more popular, Chief Science Officer at New Age Laboratories, Jenny Garley, provides an example of where a plant sap analysis can give growers a better understanding of what's going on inside of plants.
A lot of people start using sap analysis when they're either seeing signs and symptoms in the field of phosphorus deficiency, or they're not getting enough growth in the plant tissue is taken on the newest yet fully developed leaf, and phosphorus is a mobile nutrient. And so the plant under a deficiency scenario will actually move the max amount of phosphorus to the newer leaves. And therefore, if tissue is only giving you half the picture, that yes, in that new leaf, you could have adequate or high phosphorus. But if you're not looking at the other half, the old leaf, how is that new leaf getting that rate? Is it because it's balanced? Is it because it's stealing it from the old leaves, or there's an excess? Those are the three categories that SAP can tell you. So I say phosphorus because it has been probably the biggest aha moment for growers happens to be in the phosphorus application arena uptake and then anion imbalances.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. And stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
October 12th is National Farmers Day, a time dedicated to those who wake before the sun rises and often work until long after it sets. Thanks to farmers' tireless efforts, we have the food, feed, fiber, and fuel we need here in America and plenty more for export. Best of all, farmers produce all of this sustainably so that future generations can have the same bounty. Today and every day, please join Syngenta in honoring the men and women of American agriculture.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, the controversial anti-Chekhov amendment to the Ag Appropriations Bill failed before the full House late Wednesday. The amendment proposal was led by Republican Indiana Representative Victoria Spartz, who defended it on the House floor late Tuesday night.
So if you're going to force farmers to pay some money, I think farmers need to know where the money goes. And, you know, do they promote commodities or promote very wealthy jobs for very people in fancy suits? And farmers are working hard for this money. So my amendment has two parts, you know, to have more transparency with trying to do in the farm bill, but also, you know, no taxpayers' money should be used unless we know what's happening, you know, with this Chekhov dollars should be used to promote them. And I believe no one argues that this money are not used for Chekhov fees. So this is all says that they cannot be used for Chekhov fees. And I thought it should be an easy amendment. Unfortunately, a lot of special interest groups that don't supposed to even lobby with this money decided to go and attack. How could Congress ask accountability? How could Congress ask us what we're doing with the money? And I believe now it's become imperative, since they're lobbying with this money against this amendment, against transparency, I think it's become an imperative that taxpayers' dollars are not used to give to this board until we figure out what's going on with the money. So this is a very simple amendment, and they don't say that. They say they're not using this money. So it just clarifies the intent of the Congress that no taxpayers' dollars are going to be used to give this board that who knows where they spend money.
The amendment would have prevented taxpayer money from being used for Chekhov programs. However, opponents point out that Chekhovs are paid for by producer dues, and no taxpayer money is going to the programs. Therefore, they say the amendment was unnecessary. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson, a Republican from Pennsylvania, gave voice to the opposition on the House floor.
You know, research and promotion programs, commonly referred to as Chekhovs, are time-tested programs that expand markets, increase consumer demand, develop new uses for those covered commodities, and quite frankly, helps to fund the research that is needed to be able to deal with issues related to those crops or those commodities. These programs are voluntarily created by producers for producers, and they receive no taxpayer dollars for any of their activities or for USDA oversight of their activities. Now, I'm a strong supporter of research and promotion programs and will wholeheartedly advocate for their continued existence. I believe any debate surrounding the integrity of these programs should be reserved for farm bill deliberations due to the fact that no dollars from the bill that is up for consideration that we are talking about funds these programs. I look forward to engaging with my colleagues to explain the merits and the mechanics of Chekhovs and encourage anyone who has questions about these programs to engage with their producers to hear firsthand about the benefits of these programs. I specifically look forward to continuing conversations about these programs with the gentlelady from Indiana, and I urge my colleagues to stand with producers and join me in voting against this amendment.
After a voice vote near midnight Tuesday on the sparsely populated House floor was deemed in favor, Thompson requested a recorded vote, which was held the next day.
Pursuant to Clause 6 of Rule 18, proceedings will now resume on those amendments printed in Part F of House Report 118-216.
The final tally on Wednesday was 49 in favor, 377 against.
The amendment, on this vote, the yeas are 49, nays 377. The amendment is not adopted.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, we have seen an impressive rebound for U.S. pork in the country of Taiwan. U.S. Meat Export Federation's John Harith has a story explaining why this is happening.
Negative publicity surrounding ractopamine caused U.S. pork exports to Taiwan to plummet in 2021 and 2022, but there's been a strong rebound this year. Jihei Young, U.S. Meat Export Federation Vice President for Asia Pacific, has more details.
Taiwan would begin allowing the importation of pork containing ractopamine on January 1st, 2021. The response from the public was an anti-ractopamine demonstration in Taipei featuring thousands of people, and cities and the province authorities campaigned to undermine credibility and safety of U.S. pork. It includes the heavy testing on U.S. pork distributed in the market, eventually making restaurants and the retailers reluctant to feature U.S. pork.
Young says the U.S. industry is capitalizing on tighter supplies of European pork entering Taiwan and of domestic pork.
The global pork supply dynamics shifted favorably to U.S., while the EU pork supply got tighter and the prices increased significantly. At the same time, Taiwan's local pork price remained high. This year, we see more inquiries on U.S. pork from food service and the wholesale customers. And U.S. pork market share has increased from 1.3% to 9%. Steri-loin and tenderloin are being entered into food service, and branded belly and the collar butt are being sold in high-end retail, although the big pork processors are still cautious about using U.S. pork. We believe the acceptance will increase throughout the chain, creating more favorable environment for end users to feature U.S. pork.
For more, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm John Harith.
Thanks, John. And America's lamb producers can now turn to lambboard.com for resources on checkoff production, promotion, and other programs. The new American Lamb Board site officially launched earlier this month. According to ALB Chair Peter Camino, this is a totally new site for America's lamb industry. He said that includes commercial and seed stock producers, feeders, direct marketers, sale managers, auction markets, and processors. He also says it's home to everything about the American Lamb Board and the checkoff program. A wealth of information is available on the site, including the best practices for sheep productivity and efficiency, lamb quality, and recipes even. Plus, producers can find the latest news and results of the American Lamb Checkoff's activities and an online assessment payment tool. Again, if you'd like to check out this new website, simply go to lambboard.com. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Working to make food safer for those with allergies. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Millions of Americans have food allergies and could have reactions to products that contain food allergens. Some are severe and could even be life-threatening. Earlier this year, sesame was added as the 9th major food allergen when the Food Allergy Safety, Treatment, Education, and Research Act, or FASTER Act, became effective. This means that sesame, when present in food, is now required to be disclosed on food labels, and firms need to implement controls to significantly minimize or prevent sesame allergen cross-contact. FDA Commissioner Dr. Robert M. Califf says the FDA is looking for opportunities that could help consumers who are allergic to sesame and other major food allergens find foods that are safe for them to consume. The agency is interested in finding solutions within its authorities that meet the needs of consumers with food allergies. Updating the draft guidance with the new allergen chapter provides one tool to help manufacturers meet the goal. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullen. Sometimes conduct that would otherwise constitute a crime is not because it's deemed necessary. It's known as the necessity defense to criminal liability. Sometimes an act is not a crime because it was necessary to commit it. This is the necessity defense. For example, in a Wyoming case, a rancher was criminally charged for shooting two moose out of season. He pled not guilty, but the jury said he was. The moose, part of a large herd, did serious and substantial damage by consuming pasture and other forage that was for the rancher's livestock. They also prevented the production of hay and other natural grasses on the ranch and destroyed fences. The rancher sought help from the state, and together they took various measures to keep the moose away, but to no avail. The two moose at issue were feeding in the defendant's meadow, and he tried to spook them away. One of them ran into the rancher's fence and got entangled in the wire. When the moose tried to free itself, it instead tore down a considerable amount of good fence. The rancher shot the moose to protect his property from further destruction. On appeal, the court overturned the jury verdict, determining that the rancher should not be penalized because the killing of the moose was reasonably necessary based on the facts for the protection of his private property. That's the essence of the necessity defense to criminal liability. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullen.
Continuing education about agricultural risk management options for producers. That's the focus of USDA Risk Management Education Partnerships. And a recent announcement in that realm by Risk Management Agency Administrator Marcia Bunger.
We made the 2023 RME partnership announcement. We have 22 organizations that we are partnering with.
With about $6.5 million in grants for projects designed to educate underserved, small-scale, and organic producers on farm risk management and climate-smart farm practices.
A lot of our education partnerships are focused on record-keeping and the tools that they need to have in place so that they can be eligible for some of our specialty crops, our whole farm, our micro farm policies.
This year's awards build upon similar support for projects awarded funding 2 years ago by RMA and continues the agency's long-standing efforts in risk management education.
We've done partnerships, we've done cooperative agreements, career staff have hosted virtual education sessions as well as in-person education sessions just to get the word out about all of the different types of coverages that we offer. And we've done also some innovative pilot projects that have been announced in the last year or so.
Examples of projects funded by USDA Risk Management Education Awards include
Annie's Project. This is an organization that focuses on educating women in agriculture. Their particular project is going to concentrate on women involved in urban agriculture, growing traditional commodities, specialty crops, and to teach women in those areas about risk management and how crop insurance ties into that.
As well as
DATOS LLC. This program is launching a pilot called TEAM, Technology Empowerment Action Measurement. And this particular partnership is going to educate and measure and optimize financial management on a farm-by-farm basis. And what that will do is assist those individuals who maybe aren't real familiar with technology and not only get them involved in being more comfortable with technology and then in turn how to develop and maintain your own personal farm records as well as accessing online products.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
What GMO crops are grown and sold in the U.S.? Well, there's corn, like me, soybeans, canola, sugar beets, and cotton. Typically, we're ingredients in certain foods. GMO alfalfa, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are used as animal food. And while you won't find many GMOs in the produce section, there are versions of GMO apple, summer squash, potato, and papaya in a few markets. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
September has not been kind to most agricultural commodities. I'm Mark Oppel with today's bottom line report as we end the month and the third quarter. Brought to you by Kloss Equipment and Helmina. Helmina says improve your fertilizer efficiency, increase yield potential for next season right now. Products like Resurge. Visit HelminaAgri.com to learn more. We continue to chart 48 different commodities each day, grain, livestock, energy, financials, and more. And for the month, out of the 48, only 11 are finishing in the black. Orange juice, live cattle, cotton, the only ag commodities to finish on the plus side, corn very near unchanged. Energies, to no surprise, have fared the best, crude oil, multi-year highs. Oats, while in positive territory for the year, for the month of September at the very bottom of our 48, losing 11.5%. Soybean oil, not faring much better, down 7.5% for the month. Maximize your harvest potential with the efficiency, reliability, and the affordability of the Kloss Treon 740 Combine. Learn more at Kloss.com. There's a wide range of estimates for soybean ending stocks in today's report, a high 285 million with a lowest 216 million. Someone is going to be surprised. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day and a profitable week ahead.
In honor of National Suicide Prevention Month, UPL is committed to reminding growers about the benefits of mental and physical well-being out on the farm, especially as harvest is now underway for most. Kathy Dothag, an extension professional in the School of Social Work at the University of Missouri Extension Service, says prioritizing your health is more important now than ever.
Particularly at this time of the year, it's harvest time. Lots of stress. There's lots of things going on in families, back to school, new sports, too many kids and too many different things. And of course, the things that we can't prioritize are the things that we can't control. What we need to do is to think about what works best for the individuals and for their families, like get up perhaps a bit earlier when it might be a quiet time, getting off the tractor, the combine, just for a quick break, just working those kinds of things, really paying close attention to our bodies.
She talks about warning signs of mental and physical distress that growers and their families should look out for. It's important to remember that those signs involve significant changes in behavior.
If individuals are sleeping too much or not sleeping, if they're eating or drinking too much or not eating, are they more irritable? Do they, if you will, fly off the handle more quickly? Is there a change in their mood? Another thing that's incredibly important, and that's to think about isolation. Are they not doing things they used to be doing? Like, do they go to the coffee shop once a week or so? Are they usually going to church or to some kind of organization? They've quit doing that. So we're really looking at changes in behavior.
It's so important for growers feeling stressed, anxious, or even suicidal to talk to someone.
There's a wonderful option that we have that has just gone into effect. In fact, we're right now at the 1-year anniversary, and that's 988. It is the Suicide and Crisis Prevention Line. It's going to be video, so individuals will be able to, if they are hearing impaired, will be able to use that 988 line. You can text, you can call an individual who's expressing a crisis or just wants to talk to somebody or is just not feeling well and wants to talk to somebody. So they're trained counselors. If you're a family member or if you have a friend that you're worried about, you can call that 988 number.
The University of Missouri has several resources that farmers in and outside of Missouri can access.
We have several farm and ranch stress grants that allow us to provide classes, sessions for farmers and their families, for people who work with farmers. We have all kinds of written resources. There's a really good website, Show Me Strong Farm Families, that has lots of good information. information on it. One of the grants that we have is a multi-state. There are 12 states are involved, and so we collaborate to bring the best of the best so that we can provide those to all individuals, farmers, ranchers, and their farm families.
For more information, go to extension.missouri.edu. Chad Smith reporting.
Efforts continue in combating global food insecurity. And Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack had opportunity during a recent World Food Day event to discuss where the focus should be to improve food security. He starts with American ag producers and their role in feeding the world.
Farmers take a great deal of pride in knowing that they're not only feeding themselves and their friends and neighbors in this country, but also the world. And we need and have a responsibility, given the incredible productivity of our land in the United States, we have a responsibility to respond to the growing climate crisis and the link that it has, making it more difficult for developing countries to produce what they need to produce for their own people.
The secretary believes, with that, two types of commitments are needed. One is of global feeding and sustainability programs provided by USDA and the U.S. Agency for International Development. The other is getting behind increased agricultural research.
The reality is, in order for us to continue to be productive, in order for us to share the awareness of new technologies and new practices, and frankly, to learn as well from developing countries, I think there are practices that are indigenous knowledge here in this country and elsewhere that could be helpful to us in terms of our own ability to maintain productivity. So to do that requires, I think, a commitment to research.
Then there is partnership in addressing both global and domestic food insecurity concerns, with Secretary Vilsack focused specifically on public-private partnerships.
It's important for there to be a collaborative effort between the government and the private sector. I think it's important for the government to continue to look for creative ways to encourage the private sector to be engaged.
In addition,
I think we also want to look for ways in which the government, as it's purchasing food, as it's supporting those families, also finds a way to support small and local and regional producers. In other words, in order to buy food for the food banks or for school meal programs, shouldn't we spend a significant amount of that resource buying from local producers so that you're stimulating the local economy, you're providing additional revenue sources for those small and mid-sized producers, keeping them on the farm and in business. It's important for rural America and for the rural economy to do that.
He adds education for various public and private entities on how they can address food insecurity concerns within their sphere of influence also contributes to improve food security. Using the example of a tribal college in Colorado.
They've established their own little food pantry, and there's opportunities at USDA for grants and resources to be able to support that kind of activity.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
Welcome back to the show. Today, we continue my conversation with San Joaquin County Farm Bureau's Executive Director, Andrew Genesi, talking all about water bills and how they impact the California ag industry.
Is that the intent, do you think, behind when these folks craft these bills? I'm just trying to look, you know, here when we stand on the side of agriculture, my husband's a farmer. We have a dairy and we grow feed and we have almonds or almonds, as you guys like to call them, and pistachios. So, you know, we're in it, right? We understand. Sometimes it's hard to see the other side and their intent, and sometimes when you do that, you can find common ground and you can and maybe come to something that is agreeable on both sides. So what maybe was the intent behind it. Is it malicious? Is it, you know, was it really that they wanted fair water access for all? I'm not really sure. What do you think, Andrew?
Well, I think it depends on who you talk to, right? I mean, I think there are some groups that in my mind definitely are malicious. They think agriculture is ruining the environment and the only way to fix it is to get rid of them all. They think we should all be farming organically in our backyard or a small 5 acres and we're going to feed the world with unicorn farts. Right.
But you know what? Even farming organically on 5 acres, you need water from somewhere.
Yeah. No, and there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you want to do and you find the market for it, I think that's great. Mm-hmm. It's when they try and mandate it that this is how it will be done is the problem. I mean, look, it's a free country. If you want to farm that way, God bless you. I hope you make money. I hope you provide a clean, nutritious food for the people around you. Mm-hmm. I support you 110%. When someone puts a gun to your head and says, this is how you will do it, that's when I got a problem. And I think that's when Farm Bureau has a problem. I mean, I know a lot of awesome organic growers that do a great job, and they have their area, and they supply the food to the people who want it that way, and it's consumer choice. That's great. I think I encourage that 110%. Like I said, it's when they decide that, oh, you're going to do it this way because I believe that this is the only way to do it.
Right.
Well, you know, so I think there are some out there who feel that we've ruined the environment, that we're continuing to ruin the environment. We've destroyed the Delta. We've destroyed, the valley you hear people talk about farming in a desert and they wholeheartedly believe that we should not be farming here. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a small group, but that a group is out there. They can play on the emotions. We've seen it a number of times with legislation, the Prop 2, Prop 12, stuff like that. I mean, who wouldn't want to save these poor animals, they can make an emotional argument, which we always try and counter with the logical, like, look, we take care of our animals because if you're abusing your animal, you get an inferior product. Honestly, with the profit margins we have now, you can't afford to have an inferior product. You have to take care of your animals. You know, there's a reason, you talk about the dairy. My family used the dairy and there's a reason we had a nutritionist out there. And there's a reason we had a vet out there every week, just to check and make sure everything's going right and well, and we're taking care of the animals because, that's our livelihood was based on that. So we, the original environmentalists, in my opinion, are the farmers and ranchers and dairymen in California. But there are other people who look at it and go, species like a Delta smelt is disappearing. They want to fix that problem. Now, we disagree on how these problems should be fixed. A lot of people think it's straight up flow, which would go back to water rights. They want unimpaired flows through the rivers. The ag and most irrigation people seem to believe that we need to fix the environment that was destroyed going clear back to gold mining. Mm-hmm. Many of these rivers were dredged and the ecology was completely changed. We think we can do a lot better by fixing the environment for the animals rather than just mandating flows and then rubbing our hands together and walking away. Because we've been doing that for 20 years and it just keeps getting worse. So it's a disagreement on how to fix things.
So Andrew, I ask you this, if you had an opportunity to chat with a group of folks who, let's just say, Joe Environmentalist what would you say to him? He's asking you about, the water rights need to be this way, X, Y, and Z. And that's why we're proposing these bills like the three that we just talked about. Mm-hmm. How do you counter it? And how do you say, well, actually, it's going to hurt what I do as a farmer. Right. If you had 5 minutes to talk to them, what would you say?
Well, I'd talk about the economy of people, right? Because it's easy when you say, oh, the big corporate farms and we're going to take their water away. Well, great. Mm-hmm. Most farms are corporations. I know our family dairy was a corporation. We just for tax purposes is Genesee Dairy Incorporated. So were we a corporate farm? Technically, in the most technical sense, yes. We were also four generations that were living and working and farming in the same area. For over 100 years, we were dairymen in California, in Modesto. So we go out of business. Well, what about everybody who relied on us for a job? Mm-hmm. And what about all these orchards? It's not just the owner who goes away. It's all those jobs. And you look at a city like Five Points or Mendota or Fireball, where you know, upwards of 90% of those people are somehow related to agriculture in their employment. You're going to consign all of them to unemployment and destroy these towns. That has to be a thought there, because one, you can't separate one from the other. There is cause and effect. And if you're going to pull the water away from these areas, you have to have an idea of what you're going to do for these, you know, the disadvantaged communities. These are largely disadvantaged communities that the farmers and ranchers live in. They live there too. Their kids go to the same schools. And you're going to absolutely destroy these tax bases. You're going to destroy the jobs. You're going to destroy everything that these communities have, or what little they're left with now after the droughts and water cuts. And, you know, we have to have an answer for that too. You know, I don't think it's as easy as just saying, well, we'll just change the rights and give all the water to the environment. That's something you can say if you can close your eyes to the what you're going to do to the humans of the Central Valley. If you are serious about it, let's talk about it. You know, I don't think there's any farmers, ranchers, dairymen who are unwilling to talk about it, but we want to have a realistic conversation. You know, it's there's got to be a balance somewhere. And I think that's what most of the irrigation districts and the farmers and ranchers are trying to strike with voluntary agreements. I'm like, look, we understand that there's environmental issues that need to be dealt with. We're willing to work on them. But if your only answer is take the water away, that's just not realistic. And right. we can show over the last 20 years that it doesn't work.
Right.
You're going to destroy the valley, and you're not going to help the fish. So let's talk about a realistic way to find a bridge. Let's build a bridge here. There are groups you can work with. I just did a tour yesterday morning with at Staten Island. The Nature Conservancy owns the entire island here in the Delta. And, you know, we looked at they're growing rice, they're growing corn, they're grazing cattle. They're farming in an environmentally conscious way. I don't think anybody could argue that they're ruining the environment somehow. Why can't we all do that? You know, we can all farm in an environmentally conscious way. And I would argue we already do for the most part. But we can exist together. And it's the people who sit there and go, nope, we're going to take it and we're going to give the water. Say they want to give the water to a disadvantaged community. Great. They've got plenty of water. They have no jobs.
Right.
So now what?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like people want to take the time to think through to the logical conclusions of what they're proposing.
Right.
And if you don't live there, if all you ever do is drive through there, I guess that's easy, because you can turn a blind eye to the suffering.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The Center for Irrigation Technology at Fresno State will be hosting its 7th annual Ag Tech Day next month. The event showcases innovative ag, water, and energy management technology through live field demonstrations and educational presentations on the Fresno State farm. Ag Tech Day also includes an exhibitor showcase with more than 35 vendors featuring innovative technologies, products, and services. This year's event is scheduled for Friday, October 27th. Continuing education signups and bus assignments will begin at 7 in the morning, and buses will depart to the field sites at 8:15. Presentations will kick off at Field Site 1, going over flow measurement and pump efficiency testing. The next presentation will cover groundwater recharge and precision irrigation management, and the final field site will consist of a presentation on soil moisture management. More information about the Ag Tech Day is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Legislation helps organic producers meet growing demand. New legislation was introduced in both chambers of Congress to give organic producers the tools they need to increase their capacity, reach new markets, and grow their businesses. The Organic Market Development Act would codify and increase support for a newly announced USDA program that aims to solve supply chain gaps for the organic market through grants to farmers and businesses as demand increases for organic products. In 2021, U.S. sales of organic food products reached $52 billion, nearly doubling the sales done in 2010. Senate bill sponsor Tammy Baldwin says the legislation would build on the success of the Organic Market Development Grant Program and allows more producers to access these resources and tools to grow America's agriculture economy. The legislation builds on the initial $75 million annual authorization by maintaining the base CCC investment and adds $25 million in appropriations for 2024 and each fiscal year thereafter. NAFB contributed to that report.
The controversial anti-Chekhov amendment to the Ag Appropriations Bill failed before the full House late Wednesday. Indiana Republican Representative Victoria Spartz defended her amendment on the House floor late Tuesday night.
You know, no taxpayers' money should be used unless we know what's happening, you know, with this Chekhov dollars.
The amendment would have prevented taxpayer money from being used for Chekhov programs. However, opponents point out that Chekhovs are paid for by producer dues. House Agriculture Committee Chairman, Republican Glenn G.T. Thompson.
These programs are voluntarily created by producers for producers, and they receive no taxpayer dollars for any of their activities or for USDA oversight.
After a voice vote near midnight Tuesday was deemed in favor, Thompson requested a recorded vote, which was held Wednesday. The final tally on Wednesday was 49 in favor, 377 against. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halverson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet NewsHour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.